Blog Talk Radio.
Share our love.
Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao, in India, Namaste, in Japan, Konnichiwa, in Korea, Annyeonghaseyo, in Russia, Zdravstvuyte, in Germany, Guten Tag, in Poland, Dzień dobry, in France, Bonjour, in Spain, Hola, in Italy, Ciao, in Egypt, Asim Masame, in Ghana, Akwaba, in Nigeria, Female, in South Africa, Saobona, in Senegal, Smaim Baget, in Kenya, Jambo, in Israel, Shalom, in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Saudi Arabia. Assalamu alaikum. And peace be upon you all. Join us live on the On Air Radio Network. Call 727-731-5192. We want to talk to you.
All right, we want to talk to you. You can call in. I said I'm in front of some blue glasses today. Every week I'm in a red glasses mode. But anyway, we are here with Gathering of the Griots. I want to thank you for being here. Oh, do I love talking to our authors. Hercules. Because, you know, the writers are the ones that carry the history. We carry the story, right? And so I don't take black writers lightly, because we have a lot of people that have a lot of things to say about our people, but who cares? We can tell our own stories according to us for our benefit and our excitement. So that's what Gathering of the Griots does, and a full Chicago book fair. So we'll learn a little bit more about that shortly. But yes, indeed, without further ado, we are bringing a brother to the stage because he's been sticking by my side, always there for the book fair, and he is such a prolific fiction writer. He's done book discussions in the metaverse with us. I just find that he is, like, he's a real writer. You can tell by the way he talks about the industry. And so don't waste another minute. I am bringing on Tony Lindsay right now. What's up, Tony?
Hey, it's always good to be around you.
What?
Some energy.
Yo.
Good morning. That was a great introduction. I was like, who's she talking about? It's me sitting here.
And it's true. That's the thing about it. When you don't have to make it up, like you really don't like them, you just got to make up something, that's worth it. But I really like you, and I really do.
I like your energy, I like your style, I like the way you keep going. You know, you just keep pushing, right?
Thank you, I appreciate you.
Being on the, you'd be posting out there on the bus, walking around talking, I hope she got a hammer or something with her. You ain't scared of nobody. Whole conversations, just keep it moving. I was like, that girl, that boy.
Yo, that's our people. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing, you know, I don't know what people know about Marcus Garvey and all that, but I'm a Marcus Garvey girl. I'm a Harriet Tubman girl. I'm a Queen and Zynga girl. Like, all of those great black people did not fear black people. Period.
Right, right.
They just led them.
I know Garvey didn't, you know, but, and unfortunately, you know, they, you know, stretching into his organization, he had spies, and, you know, that eventually brought them down, and they were black, you know, but.
You know.
Man.
Well, yeah. There's a psychosis that comes with dealing with black people. You have to love them thoroughly because there are moments where the psychosis takes over, and then you're like, but I was helping you. So, you know, but it's one of those things. We do understand what came before the us acting this way. But see, where I come from in my universe, I know that slavery is only like 400-something years, but we ruled the world for thousands. And so I'm looking at the before the eons. I'm looking at the before that. Let me take those attributes and put them back in motion. So thank you for acknowledging it, though, because sometimes you feel like you're doing this work and it's like, does anybody see or care? But cool. Thank you, babe. So, yes, guys, we are here with Tony Lindsay. Tony Lindsay is a fiction writer, and we're going to get into his books, but Sonny, I kind of want to go into a couple of things. One, how in the world did you find us? And then after that, I want to go into what's your backstory? How all of this start coming about, writing these stories? So go ahead, take it away.
Okay, well, I find you through you. You were being you. You were at the Washington Library. There's a book fair, something going on. Now, the one on 95th Street. Whitson, you were at Whitson at Dan Carter D. Whitson Library, and there was an event, something I don't remember what the event was, but I was there, and you came by, you were talking about, you know, your dream of doing the book fair, and I was like, but you're from New York. You're like, yeah, but, you know, we got to do this, blah, blah, blah. And then another writer, Donna Beasley, was there, and Donna was like, yeah, well, I'm going to do this. And then you came back around, and you were, again, telling me about the event. And I was like, okay, well, Donna's doing it. I'll do it, too. And that was how we started. I think that was the first. I'm pretty sure I know that was the first one. Mm-hmm. And it was cool. The vibe was there. You had a bunch of people there. I was like, how's she going to get 63rd Street? You know, so you got it, you know, so. I'm always amazed. Same thing with the metaverse. How you gonna do that? But you did it, you know. So, that's how we met. How I came to be a writer. Growing up in Chicago, it was a blessed thing, you know. I went to a school called Copernicus, and Nora Blakely, Gwendolyn Brooks' daughter, worked there, and Gwendolyn came up to the school. And she told us all we could be writers. And I thought that was a really cool thing. I was like, I was already writing, you know, making up stories and stuff. And she read one of my stories and told me I could write. That stuck in my mind, too. But I thought that was a really cool job that would allow you to come to the school and hang out with students. I thought that was just cool. So it stayed in my mind. And then I was reading a lot. I read Donald Goins, Nancy Drew, you know, so my reading was across the board. I read some of my mom's books, those romance books, read some of my dad's books, and then got a library card, and we used to walk to the library. My mom worked at the library, and we would walk to the library. So literature has always been part of my life. The only, I remember taking those standardized tests, and they said, he can read, but he can't do nothing else. that was funny. I was ahead of my levels, my grade levels. And then I came across, I was in college. I was taking a class with Vashti Lewis, and she exposed me to Toni Morrison. And that was it. Those Black Studies classes were definitely part of shaping me. I had a class with Sterling Plunk, and he had us write an autobiography. And after I turned my name, he came to me and he said, if you don't do anything else with your life, be a writer. I was like, I didn't major in English. I majored in psychology because I had plans of going to get a PhD. But then things happened. Had a child, went to work. Didn't finish school right away. But I think I just had a Spanish, a math, and a science class to go. But I had all my credits. I was getting hired as if I had a degree. I was a mental health counselor for a long time, like 8-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired me as if I had a degree because I had all the science classes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I was teaching at the Chicago State Community Program. At night they had these adult learning classes, and I was teaching creative writing in those classes. And one day it was raining outside, and I helped Dr. Kelly Lewis. Something was wrong with her windshield or a car or something, but I helped her with it. And we were talking, and she's like, you need to come back to school. And I was like, I'm trying to make the New York Times bestseller. School is the one I'm attending. She was like, she had read One Day a Preacher. We talked because there were events at William Brooks Writers Conference, and I was going to those.
Okay.
She was at those. And she was like, you should really seriously think about it. We have an MFA program that focused on Black literature. And that caught my eye. Focus on Black literature.
Nice.
So I did the things I needed to do. I went to finish my degree at Turquoise UIC and applied for and got into the MFA program at Chicago State. And that fed my academic career. I started teaching. And by then, I think I had published probably 2 books.
Mm.
One Day a Preacher, Street Possessions, and Chasing It. And those were published with Urban Books.
Mm-hmm.
At Carl Weber. And that was really cool. That was a good experience for me. I had an agent at the time.
Why you laughing? Why you look? You said I had an agent at the time, and then you did a laugh after that.
Yeah, because Audrey Barrett. I was trying to call her name.
The name. Okay.
She was a great agent. I actually met her through Kwame Alexander, who published my first book. And Audrey Barrett was there, and she brokered that deal. She brokered the deal with Carl Weber. And I was a nationally known writer, and that was really cool. We did book tours, and all that was good. And then I kept writing, and I got with a smaller press. I got with Third World Press when I finished graduating. They published Pieces of the Whole.
Okay.
And that was really cool. That was like a dream come true.
Wow.
And I wanted to be published by the same press that William Brooks was published by. I think every Chicago writer had dreams of being published by Third World Press.
Yes, yes.
That became a reality for me.
Nice.
And I was really excited about that. And that book was also my MFA piece, and it allowed me to write in different genres.
Okay.
And that kind of became what I did. I came as a mystery writer, then I became known as a street lit writer.
Mm.
And then I just settled with the term Black experience writer.
Mm. Okay.
Because that's what I am. And some studying Black authors, that's where I got the term from. I didn't originate the term. There were people who used that term in the 70s. I was writing from the Black experience.
Okay.
And I was like, well, that's what I write from as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically how I came. And then I came to be a writer because I was a reader. If I wouldn't have read, I wouldn't have seen that, I could do this.
Right.
This is something I like to do. And I enjoyed the medium. I enjoyed being able to say something.
Yes.
And writing Sterling Plunk on a good writer has something to say, a good Black writer has something to say about his or her community.
Mm.
And that just kind of stuck with me. So
I got a question, because I want to take it on back, because this is the make or break for some people. You talked about how the viewpoint. I forgot the person specifically, but the viewpoint was, yeah, you read, but you can't do nothing else. Like, it wasn't like a supportive of, oh, yeah, you should write. That moment, you could have just went a different direction. You could have dealt with that in a way that was like a self-esteem issue where you don't advance, you don't take the leap and go into or even be open to hearing people say, you know, you can write. What was it in that moment that made you not feel dejected or want to give up?
Okay, so I want to say my mother, but I want to give you the backstory of my mother. I was a foster child, right? And my mother came to, I forgot where we were housed, but she came there. And she claims that when she walked in, I came up to her and said, hi, Mama. She said I was kind from the very beginning. I kind of remember that, but I don't remember it wholeheartedly. But anyway, she came in. She picked me, and we went home, and, you know, I had a brother, family, and she was instrumental in telling me that things could change. So when I went to the school, I was, they put me in what was called an EMH program then. It was for the kids that were just, you know, a little bit off kilter, and she argued. She was like, no, he's not. You blah, 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 blah. And they removed me from that class and put me in a regular class. And that was my first realization that if you move past what people think, you could be okay. So when the test scores, you know, came back, and I was like, well, okay, I do read. And so this is more important. I didn't care about the other stuff that much. But then by sixth, seventh, eighth grade, I was scoring at you know, what considered to be the acceptable level. I would like to say that high school was a stellar. I was shining, but I wasn't. I was, high school was by my desire to party. I partied quite a bit in high school, so it was reflected in my grades. And I graduated with an extremely low class rank.
Okay.
But now this time the standardized test helped. I scored so high on the testing that I was able to move forward, you know. And then I went to Circle, and but it was my mother that made me see that it's not what people say, it is how I think of what I could do and move beyond.
Mm.
And that's pretty much how it went.
Man, that's strong.
Good question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you did. I got you. I saw you bring it back. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was great because like I said, that could have been a breaking point for people when someone dissuades you from doing or following your dream, or they make you feel less than, you know, if you don't have the support system, you could fall for that. You could fall for what they're talking about and then start to not believe in yourself. And, you know, when you are a writer, you got to have faith in yourself. You have to, because it's so much fear of other people that kind of say to you, what you doing? You know, what you going to do with that? That type of thing. Black families are very famous for taking your dream, deferring your dreams when it comes to things that are not in their mind, a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever they're talking about that they think is successful.
My mother wanted me to be a bricklayer.
Oh, why is that?
She just said it was a good trade, you know. Then when I went to Circle, you know, it was what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And, she, you know, there was nothing wrong with her wanting me to be a bricklayer. It is a good trade. I probably would have made a lot more money than I made. but you're right. I think people have to push past, but, you know, there is encouragement. There has been encouragement in my life, but it wasn't always came to me as encouragement.
Okay.
And a lot of things when I heard about, Terry McMillan, they carried around a manuscript for like, I don't know, 5 years.
Mm.
And they got published. And then when she sent a story about her first check for, I think it was like $80,000. I was like, I need to get better.
Right. Do you know?
It was money motivated is a lot too, because a lot of things about successful stories. At that time, Elaine Harris had broke through.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Jerome Dickey. You know, so people were actually concrete examples out there.
Yeah.
Trying to do what they did.
I remember that time. I remember for whatever reason, I don't know why I'm in the literary industry. I have no idea. I did not grow up talking about I want to be a writer or any of that, but my life has put me in situations where as a teenager I had to do book discussions about French Fanon and all kind of Ivan Van Sertima's, mainly nonfiction. That was as a teenager. Then I went on to manage Afrocentric Bookstore, which was downtown Chicago. At that time, that was like the early 90s. And then blah, blah, blah. I was working on a literary cafe and whatever. God just said, get your butt over there in the literary industry. But I bring it all up to say, I remember that time when everybody was kind of coming up. It was like the late 90s. I was even at a conference in L.A., and it was all of them were there. Carl Weber was there. Queen of Fool was there, everybody was there, and I was working on opening this literary cafe. So I remember the sort of movement of like that you're talking about, and it's so funny. I watch now BET, they talk about Carl Weber's so-and-so-and-so-and-so. It's like the video version or the TV version of his book. Yeah. And so, you know, people go to different roads, but I want to deal with and look at what the why, like what is your connection to the Black experience that made you want to start writing about it? Because many people could care less about the Black experience. They just be in the Black experience, but they're not focusing on portraying our experience for a reason. Is there a reason behind it? Is there an underlying sort of theme or a reason why you do what you do?
Yeah. I like giving voice to the voiceless, right, or to voices. There wasn't, when I wrote like David Price books, I wanted people to have a guy's opinion who lived in the south side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted people to have the opinion of a guy who loved the city.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to write about somebody who loved the city, right? There was a time when Chicago was my thing, right? I will argue you up and down about a bowl of sausage. I was like, you know, Chicago's pizza, oh, you got to be killing me. You don't think this is the best stuff in the world. Something's wrong with you.
Right.
And then we just had so much stuff, our politics. And then there was a way of thinking that we, you know, it was a nationalist city, right?
Yes.
So that was all part of what I wanted to put on the page. I wanted to show the amount of dignity that we had that the city had.
Mm-hmm.
The election of Harold, you know, I wanted to brag on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So trying to talk about what Chicago was or what we were, and that was basically what I wanted to do. And I was told that to break in, you had to write a mystery. That's a funny story. I was looking for a literary agent prior to being assigned, finding one, like being told about one, in the yellow pages. And somebody told me you have to look under liquor stores, right? After liquor stores. So I found the literary agent. I called her. I don't remember her name. She was the only one in the yellow pages at that time. And she told me to write a mystery. And because I had written Prayer of Prayer, but it wasn't getting, I said the Third World Press. I think I sent my handwritten copy. But Bennett, bless his soul, it told me, like, man, I didn't know you sent that handwritten copy to us. I was like, I didn't know.
I love it.
Processor. That's what he sent me a note back saying, get a word processor.
Oh, I just love it.
Yeah. So, and wanting to, after, I lost my train of thought, wanting to share what it was like being a Chicagoan was mm-hmm. one of the reasons I started writing. And also, I like when I wrote Chasing It, people were, Eric, Joe, and Dickie had broke through, but I was like, well, look, I know a, there's a line that people aren't talking about. You know, people aren't talking about drag queens that make things different. Mm-hmm. And I hope I wasn't being offensive with the term, because when I wrote the book, that was the term, but trans people mm-hmm. that make a life different. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this book with this trans character who took care of a grandmother who was a beacon in the community. So with Street Possessions, I wanted to write about not just a bad person, but a person who is bad for a reason. Mm-hmm. So I wrote about this possessed crackhead, right? A possessed, addicted person.
Okay.
And, you know, I lost a lot of readers with that book, too. People were like, oh, I ain't reading that, man. That's crazy.
Why? Why was they like that?
Because it was, maybe considered satanic. With Chasing It, I lost some readers, too. But I've never been mad about the readers I've lost because I've gained readers as well.
Yeah.
And I've had literary freedom. I never been with a publisher that told me I couldn't write something.
Nice.
But I've been with a lot of publishers, too. So it hasn't, but my, what the topics I wanted to write about, I've always written about.
I love
you know,
it.
Yeah, just did a vampire, but I just, like, Melody Knight, the vampire teacher. You know, we don't read a vampire book, well, some people read it. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. My daughter was big on vampires. It was like a whole thing, like a whole time frame. You open the door, it'd be dark in her room, and the vampire movies be on. My mother was like, she was on the Christian kid. She was like, maybe we should look at, girl, you raised us with horror movies. Don't even try it. So we was raised with that vibe, please. So, but yeah, that was a thing. Yeah, so it is a thing. I think that everything you're saying, because I've watched your different books, because, of course, you've been in the book fair. We'll talk about that more a little bit later. But, man, just hearing you talk right now, that the diversity of characters alone, it's really going to be about very shortly, not the content that you're writing about, but that you need to read Tony Lindsay books. That's what you need to do. You know, Tony Lindsay books do blah, 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 blah. And I really appreciate your wanting to give that good image to Chicago, because I feel like that as well, me and my New York self. But I love Chicago and can do no wrong. I don't care what nobody is saying. Like when I walk out my door, I don't have to duck for bullets or look, oh my God, I'm going to die or some nonsense. Look, when I went to LA and them helicopters were hovering over the black community, that was a thing. I was like, yo, what is this? This is the war zone mode. But Chicago has so much good. And this is such a black city. And black people here have homes. They have galleries. They have radio stations. They have things that can create a culture that's why I do the book fair here, because I feel I'm allowed to do it. Like, people support that idea. So I love that you want to continue to give that viewpoint of Chicago and that there are things here that people can celebrate. We're actually going to take a break for a commercial. We're going to come back, and guys, we're going to get into some of these Tony Lindsay books. I can't wait. So just stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
So, folks, the Chicago Book Fair presents this 2024 Spring Fling, Saturday, April 20th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Over 100 titles by black authors, fiction, nonfiction, 10 children, free admission, open to all ages. Featuring vocalist Sherry Lowe, Dion Victoria Foxworthy, music magic time,
yourself at the end of that commercial? Hey.
Well, damn, that was really cool.
Hey. Hey.
That's something cool, but yours was really, that was really active, man. It was just, you know, that was hot.
That's what we're talking about up in here. Look, we're going to change the game, you know, and this, even this show and the ability to just show you and listen to what you do, it's important, like, people know, because they just don't know, like, you can read Harry Potter all day with your drama, but we got our own writers, you know, and like you said, with our own experience. And I'm going to tell you, when these book fairs go to these schools, there don't be no books about them in those book fairs. You go to Barnes & Noble, you hard-pressed to find a black writer unless Black History Month, maybe, you know. And so I need for our books to be accessible. People need to know, like the library was like back in 2018, they was like, we got the space. We want you to recreate the book fair in the library. But they was like, we just don't have the black writers. And I was like, I do. And so, you know, yeah, it's just that reality and us controlling our own narrative when it comes to the flyness of writing. That's what we got to do. So I want to end this. What? Say it again.
I said, there you go.
So I want to go into your books because let's take a look. Let's take a look at the flyness. Now, you see I did a promo on social media, but the first book that shows is One Dead Activist. It's like, boom, you know, it's moving. So tell us a little bit about this book and what is it about. I heard you say it says a David Price mystery. And so obviously David Price is throughout some of your books. What are the books that we're going to find the David Price experience?
That's the One Dead series, right?
Okay.
That was actually the first book that was published, One Dead Preacher, which a couple of years ago was the 20-year anniversary for that one. But there's One Dead Preacher, One Dead Lawyer, One Dead Doctor, and One Dead Activist.
Okay.
They're all murder mysteries, murders that take place here in Chicago. And the people can do good or bad, and they get murdered, right? One Dead Activist, he is an activist, and he's making change against the Chicago Police Department. There's been a shooting, and he's bringing attention to the cover-up, and he ends up getting killed, by police.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about trying to figure out why he was killed, what's going on. It's a detective story. It's fast-paced. You see an investigation, but the investigation, he and his friend, another person comes in. You see people concerned about youth. You see people concerned about youth dying. But you also get some backstory to David and Ricky's friendship and their life. But it's a fast-paced Black Mystery. It's the fourth in the series, but they're all independent. You can read One Dead Doctor without reading, having to read One Dead Lawyer. Each book stands on its own. And people like David Price, he's that Chicago guy. So he is 40s, 50s maybe by now. And this is how I got into getting published with a murder mystery. And I'm funny, I'm writing a mystery now that doesn't have David Price in it, but it still takes place in Chicago. So that's that one.
Okay. Now, David Price, where he come from? Like, what, is this based on a person? Is this somebody that you just created? Because my thing is, how y'all be creating? How do fiction writers, how do y'all just create these characters? Where are they coming from? What's the inspiration?
I was in Lumel Mati's about maybe 2 months ago. And when I was in there, the lady said, David Price. And there was a brother in there named David Price. And I told him all about the character. I'm going to get them books. We'll see. I don't know if you got them. But,
wow.
The character was a composite of people. And I wanted to write a guy who had some street experiences, who still did good for the community, who was an entrepreneur. So I wanted to write about people I had met who had impressed me, but I put them all in one character. Our brothers I met who impressed me, but I put them all in one character. And that's how David Price came to be. And I wanted him to, you know, have issues, things that he was working on. He has an ex-wife. He's got a son. He lost a child. So there was a lot of stuff going on with him that I've seen people go through, I've gone through. So I wanted to put a composite character, male character, and that's how he came to be.
Mm.
You know, he represented some of the things that I wanted him to represent. That there's a helping that is part of us. It's just part of our DNA, us helping each other.
Mm.
And I wanted to show somebody who did that. You know, we don't always, we'll fight amongst each other, but there's also some helping that was just, I just didn't see it with black male. And I kind of wanted to put that in there, and that's what I did.
What an awesome way.
Itself. And I wanted to write a character who loved the city, who cared about, you know, who cared about the community. He lives in Inglewood, who cares about, you know, and so that's, you know, that's what I did. That's how it came to be.
Yeah, so quality, because you got a saying, L. Ron Hubbard, you know, everybody know I'm a Scientologist, but one of the things he said, if you see a problem, look at what you didn't do and know why it's a problem. And I find that this writing, you know, writing is a way for you to address issues in a way that, you know, people, you could put a call to action in a book, baby. By the time they finish reading that, you know, they want to live vicariously through the character and then achieve the things they've achieved, or they get a sense of how to handle a situation based on how you've portrayed the person in the book. So it's good to hear how you've intentionally made sure that the character dealt with the issues that were important to you, that you saw needed addressing in the community. And, man, that's like David Price. We're going to meet David Price. David Price got. Yeah, go ahead.
That's what the writers for me, the Black Arts Movement, that's what I learned from reading those writers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had something to say, and they wanted to say it in their art, in their poems, in their novels, and in their short stories.
Right.
And, you know, that's part of being, that's part of reading, right?
Right.
From reading them, there was a certain expectancy of what my novel should do.
Mm.
If there's a certain, Richard Wright, Langston Hughes, Akeem Akwu, they may not be in the room with me, but they are in the room with me.
I know, that's right.
Well, he's, like he had a term, his literary father. I don't know if it was Du Bois, but I think he had a couple. And I was like, wow, literary fathers. And so basically this is somebody who guides your reading, guides mm-hmm. your writing, who you know that they are, you know. So, yeah, that's how that came, you know.
That's lovely. I just love the backstories. I love them. Now, let's look at your what made you do your vampire tale, Melody Knight? What's that?
Because I was watching vampire movies and I was like, I could do better than that. I wanted to have a black female vampire, right?
Okay.
There's been black vampires and there's been some females, but this girl here, yeah, Melody, is so she didn't want to be on her wedding day. Her groom gets gunned down, right? Mm-hmm. So she's depressed. It was a pretty gruesome scene. So she goes home, she has a handful of sleeping pills, and she's about to take them. But this man appears before her. He's a vampire, but he only feeds on depressed people.
Oh.
So he doesn't kill anybody. So he takes her home. She becomes his third daughter. He works for the CIA. His daughters end up working for the CIA, the CIA operatives. They're investigating the killing of children. Children have been killed in all across the world. So it turns out that the CIA wants to have a considerable amount of vampires working for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other thing. they turn against the vampires. So, and that's pretty much our hope, but you also see the origin of vampires here, by vampires in America. I did a little bit with slavery in this piece. There's a love story in this piece.
Mm.
But so that's why I tell people it's more than just Barnabas Collins type of vampire going on here.
Mm-hmm.
This vampire works for the CIA, so there's action. She's really, really a fly person. I like Melody.
I love it. I love it. If you want to call in, guys, the number, I'm going to put it on the screen for you. It is 727-731-5192. If you'd like to talk to Tony Lindsay, don't y'all wait to the end of the show. Do it now before we bring on our next folks. But, again, the number 727-731-5192 if you'd like to call in. Or if you want to comment, you can comment wherever you're watching this, whether it's be on Facebook or YouTube. We actually had a brother, he sent some message. I think he's from Africa. What did he say? Following from the GM Gambia, baby. Brother from Gambia watching you today.
Wow.
So thank you, brother. Boop, Africa, don't get it twisted, y'all. We do it global. And he actually said, keep moving. I know that's right. Thank you, brother. Let me see. Afusani, I think I said that right. From the Gambia. So we love that West Africa on the line this morning. And so you all can do the same and put your comments up. We'll share them. And if you have a question, we'll post them as well. And so, I didn't even really kind of ask this, but how long have you been doing this? Because there are people who want to write watching this. They have a story, too, and they're watching this, and they're listening to you, and they're listening to the situations you've been through. But what would you say, how long have you been writing these books?
So I've been writing my whole life. I've been published since 2000.
Okay.
On the Alexander with Black Words. Black Words was the first person to publish. Well, not well, he was first, but first person to publish a book. I was first published on Timbuktu.
Gotcha.
Which is it's still a website, and they published one of my short stories, and I was ecstatic. Mm-hmm. Would have thought I won the lottery.
I love it. Okay.
Yes, since about 2000. Now, this Killing Breeze, that was a book that I wrote in response again to police shooting. That's funny. Both of them have the theme: one dead activist and the Killing Breeze.
Mm-hmm.
But that started out as a short story. I think it was a short story that actually published on Timbuktu.
Okay.
So that is actually chapter one,
okay,
which is scares people a little bit, but it's a good story.
Uh huh.
You get two perspectives: a undergraduate student and the actual the PhD professor.
Okay.
So it bounces from chapter the two different perspectives. Americans.
Okay.
And it's a good story. It's a good thriller. The mysteries are you trying to figure out who had
who done it, right.
Right. And a thriller, it's like, who's it going to happen to next?
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, we have a caller, actually. 706-202, Brother Kwame, you on the air. How are you today?
Grand Rising, and greetings to your guests. And I'm very proud to hear a black man talking about writing and putting out knowledge, even if it's fiction, you know, because
yes.
I sit here in stolen lands of the Muscogee Creek Nation in Edenton, Georgia, the birthplace of Alice Walker. And, you know, to know that, and the book also of Uncle Remus, that author was born here. And so, you know, and I lived in Chicago and came up in Inglewood. And to hear,
nice.
You know, these different greats that we have had, because there's a proverb that says, behold the words of our ancestors. They are written in books. Open them and study them and receive their wise counsel. And so these are the ways, because each human being is a book. If you journal every
yes.
day for a year, you've created 365 pages. That is your book. Because you're talking about
right.
your life. So it's being able to see how to use yourself and your life experience, because we say that when an elder dies, a set of encyclopedias are gone on to the other side. And we have to know how to learn how to capture our children as they begin their journey called life. And all of us, like I started off, all of us are a story, and how we tell our story is very important, you know, even to the point
yes.
where comic books are stories of entertainment, sci-fi, Octavia Butler, you know, W.B.E. Du Bois, James Baldwin, you know, all of those greats put their words, Phyllis Wheatley. So what we're looking at is how do we get our story? We read, like he was saying, that when you go to book fairs, a lot of the books are not us, it's them. So when do we begin to continue to tell our story? Because
yes.
we have a story. And, you know, now it's technology, it's keys on the paper, but it used to be paper and pencil. So I commend him and I thank him for, you know, producing that, because when he was talking about Don Lee, or who he calls, I knew him when he was Don Lee, came out of Booty. And
Safisha. I came out of Booty, yeah.
Right. And so these are some greats that we've had come out of Chicago and the world. So thank us.
Yep. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you. I love that concept that we are all stories, because every house I go by in Chicago, I always want to go in and hear that story. I'm going to work on that project one day. Maybe I'll and hear what those stories are. But thank you, because Tony Lindsay is going to be – let me change that. He is one of the greats. That is what we are working on right now, making it so that the world knows his work and can listen to – the experience of the Chicagoan and listen to the experience of our people through his work. So thank you so much for calling.
And one thing that you just stated, that was Zora Neale Hurston's job when she came through the South after slavery and interviewed all of those elders that were in captivity. And so that's a very important part, because every house is a library.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that viewpoint. We need that. And thank you for your encouragement of Tony.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. That was great.
No doubt. Yeah, so you're listening. If you're listening and you're not watching, you are listening to Tony Lindsay, one of our fiction authors of the Soulful Chicago Book Fair. And his website, if you want to get these books, if you're watching, you see it on the screen. If you're listening, that's www.com. www.penn-4hire, H-I-R-E.com. So that's www.penn4hire.com. And if you have any questions, definitely give us a call at 727-731-5192. So, Tony, as we go forward, you talked a little bit about what you're working on right now, right? First of all, you already got this great series of books. How is it that you're still creating? Like, what is that about? Where is that coming from that you still are creating more stories?
There's stuff to do, and I still got something to say. I still got stuff I want to talk about, and there's still a lot to do. I wrote a couple of movie scripts. I'm trying to see if I can make that happen, too. The novel I'm writing, and again, I look at people who were before me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at Walter Mosley, and I'm like, man, I've read, like, five different mysteries of him where he's had, like, more than just, it's not just Easy Rollins. I was like, let me write another mystery with a different character, you know? So, you know, I'm influenced by people who are still in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I get ideas from, you know, when I see somebody who's making career moves, I'm like, I wonder if I can do that. When I see writers who have written movies, I'm like, dang, I thought I should try that too. So, I'm still active, and I think that's a good thing, right? I think having, and I still got desires, you know, there's things I still want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to EQS, you know, there's a long time, you know, stuff that I want to get and buy. So, yeah, I keep writing. And I'm still picking up stories. I still got something to say. I still like amazing people. And I still sell books. I want to have something new on my table in the 2025 book fair.
Hey. That's right. Because the key is for us is to develop a following of you so that people really do say, yo, I do Tony Lindsay. That's why I read those books, you know. And it's just a matter of knowing. So being able to take something like this show and share it, and people who just start coming and giving you their testimonies and what they felt about it, I think that's important. And I'm going to tell you, my background, actually, I went to school for television. Idea of a film, you done turned on a light bulb in my mind because I got my own films up my sleeve. But this whole vibe of, because I'm already working on, and let me show myself so they'd be like, where's she at? I'm already working on this whole, umbrella of the Soulful Chicago. Like right now, this Sensei Boba Tea Bar, it's like a tea lounge here in South Shore. They're carrying Soulful Chicago books. And people come to me now like, yo, we want to carry your books. And that's what I'm talking about, like people being members, people, me being able to put us as an umbrella in these different places so that you don't have to worry about it by yourself. But see, I'm looking at the film vibe, like, okay, what about turning these books into films, right? And that's the next, you talk about I'm doing a lot now. Nah, money, like you said, it's a wrap. Like, I got some other things up my sleeve. The metaverse is a thing, but our movies, the movies of our books, and we in charge. Like, nobody gets to tell us what to do.
There you go.
I'm working. I'm looking at that. I know Amandilo, if you watch this, be looking at that because we're kind of talking about this world and the creation of film, the film version of our books, which just put another thing on our power to go out and create an effect, you know, and to say something that we got to say and to make it known. So, again, if you're listening, and you want to call in at 727-731-5192. You're listening to Tony Lindsay, author of One Dead Activist. He got One Dead Doctor, One Dead Lawyer, and he got One Dead Preacher. It's a series, and I love that we can read them separately, and we don't have to, you know, be like, oh, my God, I got to read the first one first, and, you know,
no.
Can read that series. So do you have a future beyond, like, you got more things to say? What's your ideal scene? Is it something in addition to the film version of the books? You did a little earlier. You said you did a writing class or you taught a writing workshop. Is there anything in the future for you, like, mentoring writers that are coming about and want to follow your genre?
Yeah, like you said, I write different genres. I have taught classes. I've taught workshops. And generally, I wait me personally for somebody, you know, call them and ask me to do one.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't actively pursue those. I am actively currently just writing that novel. That's taking up my time.
Sure.
And I'm happy with it. It's because it's different. And I wrote, like I said, I wrote the two screenplays, and there's some conversation about one of those, and that's pretty good. And I am, I still teach. I teach English at Ivy Tech. I used to teach at Chicago State and Harold Washington. I retired from the, partially retired from teaching. I just teach at one school now, which as an adjunct, I used to teach at 3, 4. Yeah, now I just go into one. And those are my days. I teach and I write a lot.
Gotcha.
So,
I like it. I see you, and I know a little bit of what this is like, and I love this life. It's where you speak at colleges that where people are studying the subject matter, and they fly you out. Tell you to bring, like I did a conference for some social workers or something in LA. So they were like, can you bring 100 books? I was like, of course I can. And I could have sold 100 more. I mean, it was really astounding to have people say, we use your videos in our classes. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't even know what they're talking about. But, you know, whatever subject matter I have on YouTube, it just showed me, you got to keep this going. That's why I'm even doing the show right now, because people are looking, and when you stop, you tired. Like, you know, I was like, I'm tired of it. No, people need it. They need to see the example of what we're talking about, that we can create forums to take ourselves to another level. And so that this listening to you say, that's what I do. I write and I create, and you are going to get a movie. That's not even a question. Your line of work obviously feels movie worthy, and so, you know, if given the chance to fly out to different schools and speak to creative writing programs and sell your books, are you open to that?
Yeah. Without a doubt, I like going places. But you go with purpose, Father. You don't dilly-dally, right?
Mm.
And you move with purpose. You do things with purpose, and that's the part that that's amazing about you, you know? And it's admirable. And you get concerned and love for other people, which is also admirable. You
thank
know?
You.
And people know you care about them.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's a good thing.
Thank you. And that's important because sometimes when you're doing this work, you be like, oh, God, is anybody listening? And you just can't give up. So do you have any last words of wisdom? My girl Marion Perkins said, yes, onward and upward. I know that's right. Listen, go ahead. That's what I'm talking about. Do you have any last words of wisdom you want to give to the audience before you leave?
I don't know if it's wisdom, but buy one dead activist and get it on Amazon.
look now.
Look,
let's put this website up one more again. That's 10-4-hire.com. 10forhire.com. That's where they can get all your books, correct?
Well, yeah, but on Amazon, this is just my website that gets you back. Not just, but my website. My daughter put it together for me.
Okay.
But it'll lead you to Amazon to get the books, yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you today, baby. Tony Lindsay, give it up. Woo, woo, woo. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you so greatly. You were awesome. And let's continue to grow. Y'all going to see him at the book fair on April 20th. That's right. April 20th, he'll be there. You get your book signed and come and meet him and get that series. that one dead activist, one dead preacher, all that good stuff. All right, Brother Keith, much love to you. All right. You guys, we're coming back. We're going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, boom, 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 we got another fiction writer that's going to give it to you. Oh, God, you got a lot of good books. But stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Posse went back to the village with the golden box. He set the golden box and gathered the children, and you are gathered now. He opened that box. And stories, yes. What's out of the box?
This is why we are here, because we're right here. Give it up for the young people. Okay, baby. Give it up for them and out of them. That was the
best. Hi. I'm Lauren Crash Love. I'm the sister of the late Dr. Francis Crash Love, author of the ISIS Papers and the Crash Theory on Color Confrontation. We're Chicago ladies. And to honor her legacy, I have her books at the Soulful Chicago Book Fair, Saturday, July 16th, 2016.
Black Fairy in the Street. Young Jack and the Air Wants to meet with his and he would pick that cowboy. So these are three plays.
Calendar, stop playing. That's going to be the day and the energy. I can already feel it for that day. But we are going to bring on another author. This brother right here, look, he stopped me at an event. Was like, yo, I want to be in the book fair. I was like, I got you. He was like, blah, blah, blah. Let me show me how. Look, and we made it go right. So he will definitely be in the next book fair. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We're going to bring on another beautiful fiction author, and his name is Why Black More. Let's be the boy. Hey, brother, what's up?
Peace.
I'm lovely. Glad to have you. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah,
but it's time to hear. So talk to me a little bit about how did you find out about it? I'm just curious about that.
I just remember, I want to say some social media, and then a couple of times when you had the book fair, I want to say it was on 61st, I got there like the end of stuff.
Okay.
Like, some type of way my travels would leave me, like I would always be kind of missing you.
Okay.
And then people would mention to me, like, that lady right there, like, it's funny because you're not very, not a gigantic person. Physical stature, you got this huge aura, so here you come along straight, everybody in the world, man. It was like, that's the lady who run the book fair, da 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 da. So, I mean, sometimes the wires get crossed, you have other stuff going on, and you know, because I do run other, I do have other ventures, so I'm not a full-time author. Well, I'm a full-time writer, but I'm not a full-time author. So that's the difference, which we could talk about later. But so it just kind of was this, becoming aware and hearing your name and hearing about the Soulful Book Fair, and it's kind of funny because my name is kind of more synonymous with the street stuff as opposed to the actual structured stuff.
Okay.
So I get a lot of, you know, sometimes I get, man, why you ain't talk to so-and-so? And be like, man, I went over there, they didn't know who the heck I was, so I just went back to what I know how to do. Like, I know, you know, it's like, when you know how to do certain stuff, I'm going to go do what I know how to do.
Sure.
I figure it out. And then, like you say, sometimes the universe tends to work things out. You know what I'm saying?
Everything in its time, baby. Everything in its time. You know, it's so funny that you talk about that, me and my stature, because I really don't know how short I am until I see a picture, because I really do, like, I be coming up, like, even if it's in the street, I love the street. I actually love that whole vibe, right, the population, because I grew up in Harlem, so it's not like I ain't got to be a drugsman and all that, but just the energy, you know, you get real people. So when I'm out there, I just be fearless because I really love my people. So it's no, it, you know, I do feel huge, but when I see a picture, I be like, yeah, you bad little. But I'm happy that we did cross paths, but I say everything in its time. And I think it's a perception of the book fair that we won't do street lit or urban whatever fiction, but that's fine. That, I don't know where they get that from.
Early on, I remember, and that's the thing, not from directly from your mouth, so I'm not saying you discouraged
yeah.
it, but it's
yeah.
like, well, they only do kids' books, or they only do conscious stuff, bro. You know what I'm saying? It was like, oh, well, you know, well, and then this is the thing, and some people get angry or have a feeling or feel a way about somebody selling, like if you have a store and you only want to sell, you don't want to sell plates. You can't get angry at somebody that wants to sell pots and pans. That's their market.
Mm-hmm.
So and the crazy thing is, though, I never really said, excuse me, Spider, I do urban fiction, do you? I just kind of, just like I said, because my wives were never really connected.
Yeah.
Fully connected and never really got discussed.
Right. It's just funny because they made that up. Because my book fair never just focused on children or whatever. You do have to get accepted, though, because guess what you're not going to do? You ain't coming in there with the book cover with somebody butt showing it. You ain't doing that. Or, right, you know what I'm saying? Because it is a family event. And then a person ain't coming talking about the preacher's prostitute. We ain't doing that, you know. And so I think that they just equated whatever they made it up. And Scientology, you say they dubbed that in. Because I love, you see, Tony. He do street lit, then I got you. But all of y'all stuff is legit. Like, when you look at your books, you're not, it's not crass, and it's not, you know, the titles and the images aren't offensive. So that's something somebody made up. So thank you for being in the mix.
Well, I mean, it's always better to get what you're going to get from that person anyway. But, like, when you're dealing with things, you're going to, a lot of times you get the second, third layers, and but she says, you know, well, she never said it to me, so.
True.
You know.
True. Get it from the horse's mouth. Get it from the horse's mouth. So let me ask, what's up? What's the backstory? Because, you know, you're talking about you are not an author full-time. I'm like, how could you not be an author full-time with all those books? But what's behind all this that you chose to write urban fiction and the experience? Tell me about it. What's the backstory?
What I can say is it's crazy because listening to Tony Lindsay, though I've known him for maybe over almost the beginning of my career,
mm-hmm.
which is 20 years, 20 plus years, I never knew that much about him than I just mm-hmm. listened to your show and heard. But we kind of grew up similar. Well, I grew up, my mother was murdered when I was young. And she, one of the last things she instilled in me, was a love of reading. So I grew up reading. That was my escape. Getting passed around with the family, you know, getting passed around in different places. And so one of my only real solace I could find, real safe spaces, was reading or being lost in the pages of a book. Everything from science fiction to fiction fantasy. And then some years later, in my early, I still wasn't a teen yet, I ran into Donald Goins. I ran into
mm-hmm.
Donald Goins, but
mm-hmm.
I actually have to fight about reading. I have to fight because I was growing up in the projects, out in the garden as a young guy. So I would be sitting around with a book. But the one thing about what I learned was getting beat up a lot from being, you know, one thing, most people that know how to fight used to get beat up. It's kind of a hand-to-hand thing. Okay, so I'm not going to get punched this time that way. They're going to have to punch me another way. So, but I remember sitting around on the swing, and I remember this guy, I was reading The Tower on Lord of the Rings, one of the Lord of the Rings books. This is in the playground of Olive Garden, and a guy walked up to me like, man, you always read, little dude. You're a bad self or whatever, because I had issues or whatever. And he's like, check this out. And he gave me a copy of the book, Dope Thing, by Donald Goins. And the crazy thing about it was, like I said, I had been reading all this other different stuff, but I didn't want to even read it. So I remember him, man, check it out, little guy, you going, man, you a reader, you going to like this. And I remember reading it, and I remember, once I opened it, I couldn't put it down because everybody in the book I knew. You know, man, I knew. That was my dope thing, auntie and uncle, you know what I'm saying? It was the sleep, it'll speak you up. The man right there, he'll smile at you, but to them, you got your pop, you know what I'm saying? It was,
right.
The bigger homies pulled up in a stolen car, you know what I'm saying? Okay, why the neck of the car look like that? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it was in these books that I never knew because, and I think it's a great, this is going somewhere off, but I think it's a great disservice when it's done to black children.
Mm-hmm.
Because we a lot of literature is forced on us in the systems. You got to, you know, people that die. A lot of this, I remember being, you got to read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but why I'm not reading Langston Hughes? Why this isn't, you know, why I shouldn't read Nigger, you know what I'm saying? Why I shouldn't read from Niggas to God? Why don't I Eat to Live? Why I'm not reading any, why aren't my children, because your enemy, you know what I say, still your enemy is educating your children so they tell them what to read, so they keep them with steady diet and stuff that keeps them bloated mentally.
That's right.
So, and they have learned these things. But like I said, going back to what I was saying, it was the first time where I really looked at a book. It just wasn't kind of like I had read the classics. As a child, I was reading Tale of Two Cities.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was reading Call of the Wild and all this type of stuff. But for the first time, I opened the book, and literally, that was my auntie.
I remember
reading about a scene where the guy had to, I think he had a needle sticking out his arm. This is, I'm talking about, this is 40 years. So this is, I'm kind of, but I remember he was talking about how the sword and the pus was looking for one of the dope-faced open swords. I remember wrecking. I remember basically going, like, I want the box.
Yeah.
Hold on, this is somebody's book, some written words.
Mm.
The written words that did this to me. It was like, one of the most powerful. That was one of the most powerful things I've ever read in my life. And like I said, it was mainly because I could see me in the page. It's my people in the page. It's people that look like me. It's like I said, if you read about Call of the Wild, or you read about, you know, you read about it's a dog race in Alaska. What the heck would that got to do with a Project Boy from Oakdale Gardens on 132nd Street, Block 17 in the 70s? Nothing. But one time, this dope just walked by and stopped right there and started nodding.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him talking with the Scratchy Boys, yeah, y'all come, you know, like, and they describing this, like, oh, but that's,
yeah.
I remember them talking about the dope thing with the drink the cough syrup, with the kids drinking out of lane. They used to keep the cough syrup in their pocket. But it's a dope thing, literally. Right here with this,
mm-hmm.
writing about it, so it just really had that, really had that effect on me. And after that, I was hooked. I was really hooked with the street stuff.
Yes. Let me say this: your energy is electric. It's electric. I'm like, ooh, this is good. Now, let me tell you how electric it is. They getting it in. Let me tell you, they sending this stuff. Look. Look at this comment right here. Homegirl said, there go my girl Jamila. She said, it's good to be here with amazing authors from Chicago. Thank you, Jamila. Uh-oh, what we got right here? LaShawn said, keep doing the great things for the kids. Why Black Moore so proud of you? Thank you, LaShawn, no doubt. And then, yeah, and then look, Tony said, what up, friend? Nice. And then look. Wynell said, I love your stories, Why Blackmore. What? Yeah, so, look. Yeah, thank you for being here. Yeah, brother, your energy is electric and fabulous. And it's, first of all, if you're watching this, what you know about brothers telling you straight up that they were voracious leaders, like they were readers in leaders, like they're reading young. And so this concept of, you know, black, if you want to hide something from a black person, put it in a book, and it's malarkey. It just is. There's no way you could be the people who invented writing and then you don't read, you understand? But, so it's a myth. Go ahead.
I hate to say it, but right now they have rewired. They've been successful in rewiring this generation that's currently in play right now, who are going to be the next, and they are the influencers, and they're going to be the next decision makers.
Yep.
And they kind of rewire them to the microwave. So they're like, grandma, they don't want to use the oven like grandma. You can't put the whole macaroni and cheese in the microwave. You know what I'm saying? You got to go put it in the oven and it bakes.
Yes.
They think they can get everything from a quick TikTok video, and they always got somebody just willing to tap their face. All you got to do is, that's all you
got to
do. You missed a lot of steps, bro.
Yeah, well, check it. I think that our role, and that's why the book fair exists, is because we're bringing it back. Like, we're bringing the need to read. The motto is feeding the read. Let me see if I got it right. Feeding the need to read and succeed, right? That's our whole flavor right there. And so my thing is, if we're going to work with young people, we have to be relevant to them first, and then we have to speak in their language and find a way to make these stories, them writing them and reading them a thing. I have a workshop that I do called Phone Book. And so I have young people write short stories from the text in their phone. I said, y'all got content because you text, you post. When older people tell you, you don't read like we used to read, or you don't write like we used to write, they don't know what they're talking about, because reading and writing is what you do on a daily basis. Now, we just have to show them how to package it and tell their own stories. And then I think we will become more relevant to getting them to attract themselves to what we're talking about, what we're used to. I know when I went to college, I didn't have no computer, straight up. I definitely didn't have no cell phone. I didn't have devices. So I did different things, but yeah, what you're writing though is a way to get them to cross over, because I don't know how old the readers usually are, or if you have any coming of age stories. But I see you traveling in schools, talking about writing, talking about, you know, how you used to read and the reason why you started writing. And I can see that as something that schools would want because of what you do and how you do it and from whence you came. So I definitely see that.
Well, but not to put the cart ahead of the horse, but I not only write urban fiction, but I write now. I started out just writing strictly adult stuff.
Okay.
But over the years, I was like, people would bring me in settings where they would be like, man, my students love your stuff, but it's crazy. And so what I ended up doing was getting with my goddess, and we created our own press. And we started doing young adult stuff.
Nice.
It's
dope.
The name of stories. But if you take out the graphic stuff,
okay.
Sex is removed, the language is trimmed down, no cursing.
Mm-hmm.
But they still keep a lot of situations. And the reason why the situations are kept is because the situations are relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just urban, it's not just a whole bunch of cocaine. I've sold a whole bunch of cocaine, now I'm a drug dealer, now I made a whole bunch of money, I bought a whole bunch of Gucci stuff, and
mm-hmm.
now the niggas just, no, that's not even the real narrative.
Right.
So what we're doing, and also along with my wife, we've created a what's called URI, or the Youth Urban Reading and Writing Initiative.
I love it.
What we do is, if it's a non-for-profit where we come into schools, we're working with media literacy. We've been teaching creative writing. We've had creative writing classes. Well, I've been teaching creative writing for 20 years. This year makes my 20th year teaching it.
Nice.
And we've been teaching creative writing, but we're also teaching media literacy. And one of the main things we do is try and meet, even with the books, with the young adult books. I remember joining the gang as a youngster because it felt like love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we loved the home, so we went to the street to find love, but I wasn't literate, so you're not street literate at that point. You just see something, you think it was good, so you end up in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you found out on the back end that there was this whole bunch of small writing that you did not read. Oh, yeah, you can go to jail, you get killed, you have a lot of enemies, you probably end up on drugs, you probably won't end up being successful. You never seen none of that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You remember, join the gang, are you gonna have love? You know what I'm saying? So what we try to do with our new text, with our new books, is show that we try to show every facet of it.
Yes.
So it's like, if it's this pretty shiny apple, but the back is rotten, we're gonna show you the rotten side too. So,
nice, yeah.
That's all. I got little guys that have been in my programs that I do. We've been doing programs, and I've done programs for a long time. I got little guys that probably never come home from prison.
I feel you.
That don't mean they didn't get what I told them. They just didn't apply it.
Sure.
And we got some guys who, I've got some success stories. People who met my program. I got some little guys, they met in my program. Years later, they married. They're 30 now. They met 20 years ago on my program.
Nice.
My first program. Now they get married with kids.
Love it.
So it depends. It depends on if you're using the information. But one thing about it is you have to have information.
Yes. Can you show those covers again, please, of the young adult titles? Hold them up close to that. Hold them up, baby. Yes, To Live and Die in Chirac, and then Why Blackmore, what's that title of the second book?
Ain't No Love, A Heartless Chronicle.
Yes. Yes. So I love that. Because that's a... Go ahead. Yeah, come on, man.
Remember they did this movie?
Yeah.
Like we did the movie Chirac.
Yeah.
I'm so disgusted by this movie because there was a real chance to really address something. First of all, Chirac is not a real place.
You better say that. Say that.
But we can't dispel how they really feel
mm-hmm.
when they're walking out the door and being killed.
Mm-hmm.
See, I really got real young homies. Like, I really got real young homies in the trenches that's tired, that'll take your life, that'll take your car,
mm-hmm.
but also that'll... Man, look out, man, let that lady pass, you know, so
mm-hmm.
I know different sides of them.
Yes.
They live in a place where they feel like they're in danger.
Yes.
They don't have to in the home, protecting them, teaching them how to do certain stuff. So they look at things a lot differently than my generation did. Even though we might have ran around the streets and did whatever, we still had a certain, you know, code that we went by. They don't have that code. So you had the chance when they, in this movie to give so much information about what was going on with the mentality, and they kind of made a mockery of it. They kind of made a mockery while with this movie. And I remember they was called around looking for people from the streets that would they could come get them some real stuff, because they try to do it the right way, you know what I'm saying? But it's like coming up, it's like if you visit a lot of towns, you got a lot of family, and depending on who you visit, you know what I'm saying? If you go to the wrong crib, you know, you might got a roach in your ear, no, they ain't tripping, I got kids. If you make this one more call, you could have smelled on some warm, clean sheets.
Because he wasn't, he just was big. And they forced him to play ball.
so amazed, man. Somebody really admit that no, I didn't really want to do this, but they made me do it. That's why I wasn't that good. So really, chill. It's about kind of it's based on living in your brother's footsteps. You know, this guy chill. He got to live up to his brother, cause he lived up to his brother's footsteps. But the real question nobody ever asked him is, does he want to? Everybody expects him to, but does he want to? Mm-hmm. So that's what chill is about.
Excellent.
It's actually a young adult. So okay. That means it's good. So you can start in about sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
No sex.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one thing is in the back of the young adult books, I have to get or I'll be slaughtered by my wife, is there to be used in the classrooms, chapter by chapter, their discussion questions at the Yale. And what they do is they don't just touch on just the chapter, but they actually touch on what the chapter was addressing in real life. The real emotions, because a lot of times these kids, they need to have a dialogue, they need to speak, they need to talk, they're hurting, they're angry, they don't understand a lot of stuff, one thing I teach them is that they have to learn how to use their voices, and when they use their voices, you have to be able to speak, or when you're able to, you have to be able to write well enough for somebody to pay attention to what you're saying. You can't just be, nah, stand, nah, me, you heard me, yeah, okay, gotcha. You can't just say, no, you got to say, I don't feel good about this because A, B, and C.
Yes.
This is when you did this, this is how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just count my feelings, I feel like this because you got to learn how to say it in a respectful manner where it can be accepted. You
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when you're heated, you still got to be able to talk and explain yourself or explain your point of view without losing your manner, without being disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
so one of the things that's good, I've heard from some of the teachers that have used it, the SEL, that they said that the questions took on a life of themselves, and they looked up, they had started with one question, but they knew it, the whole period had gone.
I love it.
So.
I love it. That focus on the young people, that's going to put you on top. Because, see, you can't do nothing but future when you're focusing on that. Like, how is this impacting the future? We do so much as a race scowling at our young people and frowning at their pants. I can be quiet. What you got for them? What you have for them to revel in and to, you know, you want them to respect you for what? Like, you could have a young person revere you, and all you got to do is show them some love, give them an opportunity to express themselves, all of that. So I do love that you're doing that. I got a question. Is that wifey in the background?
Yes.
Tell her to come over here. Tell her to come to the camera. Get over there, girl. Let me see you, girl. Stop playing games. Let me see. Boop, 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 boop. I just want to put it in the frame. Let me see.
Right.
Oh, oh. What's up? Look.
Dr. Jamie
Roo. I love it. Thank you so much for your contribution and for loving a black man. I think that is so strong. That's all I feel brothers really need to shine is to see sisters that see the shine and know how to check your womanist, feminist, whatever, be quiet, and go ahead and build them brothers up. And that has nothing to do with relinquishing who we are. It has everything to do with what we see as mothers and what we see as women. It's like we see things a little different sometimes, and they do have a different emotional thing, but the support that the brothers need is right there. Stop fighting it. Stop fighting it, and then everything will be smooth as silk. But come on.
It serves, you know, entities to
take
advantage of this stuff.
Yeah. And I think I want us to not be so gullible. Stop being so gullible. Like,
we're fascinated with screens. So anything on the screen, it got to be right. It got to be ridiculous. They said it on the screen. It was on the screen when they said it, so it's real.
Yeah.
But that's what we fight against with the media literacy thing. Like, we really, like, she's one of Illinois' foremost leading voices in the media literacy fight. Like, she really is, like, trying to get this stuff instituted all throughout the state where it becomes part of real curriculums where they're learning to teach these kids at an early level and everything on the screen isn't right. Everything on the screen isn't true. You have to do some digging for yourself.
Say it. And we need to do more work together. Like, the beauty of this show is look at all the stuff we're finding out about each other on this show. Like, what we're doing right now, this is so bigger than people who just want to tell a story. There is an intention underneath all of this to create a different reality, and that's the power we have as writers. We can impact the world. Your books, we just had a comment from a dude from Gambia this morning for Tony. Like, what are we talking about? That means black people watching this in Africa and just all over the world, so we can't take for granted. Uh-oh, look, you got a fan. Let me put this up. I see a fan. Yes, hi, Jeremy. Oh, she got a fan, too. Whenever, put it up.
Thank you.
No doubt. Don't be, look, celebrating. Don't be hating, brother. But, yeah, so it's, I know, right? But, yeah, this is such a great endeavor, and I would love to work with you guys with what you're doing with the Youth Writing Initiative, however y'all see fit. It's like just utilizing each other's power, you know, and so.
A lot of times is we take money out of our own pockets, we get donations, and we donate. We definitely go to we send books to detained youth and young adults for free. We donate books when we can. To alternative schools. The last time we was out of like 80 books, you know, and that still wasn't enough. So and then we also will work with where I do teach. Well, we actually have we got a lot of stuff coming. We have workbooks coming. We have young adult we have picture books for children coming. We got a few things that's coming down the pipe. I don't mean down the line. I mean it's like. It's 2024 stuff is coming. So, but we definitely do our part. We're not just like we do. Yuri is a nonprofit, so everything is above board. When we take any donations, we make sure all proceeds go to the programs. It's nothing that we're trying to keep for ourselves. We're really trying to reach you, and we do. I mean, I go to schools and talk. I used to be able to go to the detention center, but once COVID and everything, regime change and all type of stuff.
That's all right. We'll be back. Don't you even worry. You'll be right back there. Yeah, no doubt that you'll be right back. And this is something you might want to think of. I give my book away on the buses and trains, right? Because I just do. I be seeing them out there yelling at the kids, this and that. My first book is called Beating Black Kids. But what I started to do, because like you said, you turn around, that's 80 books going, and okay, we love it. We love the kids, but you just need to be able to support what you do with the books. So this is what I started doing. People love the story so much because I would document this, what happened on the bus, train, took a picture with the mama and the kids with the book or whatever. And so they started to pay for 10 of the books at a time, buy, like other people who wanted to see type of, and when they would buy those 10 books, that gave me 10 books I could give away for free, you see, because they like them, they like the mission. So that might be something to think about.
We honestly are doing that now. Like every time we've been able to, like, it's been friends, like I said, out of our pockets, whatever, any donations, we got to go fund you, we got to day going up on my birthday and movie day.
Mm-hmm.
We've been fortunate enough to be able to give the stuff away. So it's not about, I mean, we always use sales and books, but this is more important. You know, this is way more important.
Sure.
You never let 10 bucks might try to stop and get 10 to an officer, somebody might stop you from making a million. So I don't
True that. So, you know, it really requires thinking out the box. And thinking about the life of the work, like what is the life of the work beyond? Because when they be talking about come to the book sign and meet the author, I'd be like, you ain't Tyra Banks, kid. They're not coming like that. Like, whatever, you know, just deal with the subject matter, because the subject matter will have you in a ton of places that people needed to hear that message. And your book is that byproduct that gets them there. Before we end out and go to our next author, tell us a little bit about Heartless. She had a little sister vibe on it. So what's that book about?
Heartless is an adult version of Ain't No Love, but it's just showing a black family just in Chicago. Chicago, that kind of that south side, it was kind of they in the trenches. The little brothers are running wild. The two sisters, one in love with a scammer, one just kind of doing their thing. They want to stand our work or share their body. It's just, you know, it's got social media aspects of it. It's violent with the adult version, which is hard. It's violent. It's everything is in there. But it's kind of just showing, and like I said, I've never do anything. There's never any glorification. But it's funny because I remember my early stuff, early on in my career, I was at the Random House,
mm-hmm.
big book or whatever. And these things where people would say, you're glorifying violence, but it was people who didn't understand our culture. Violence is in our culture. Violence is a part of our culture.
It's a kind of American culture. Let's get that straight.
On both sides of it, mm-hmm. the honest. So I understand violence of anything. So when I'm writing, I don't make it seem like I'm just everybody's a supervisor. Blah, blah, blah. You know, Lino Brown stabbing somebody in the hand. I never liked that pretty. No, I'm not doing that. I'm mm-hmm. just showing you that this does happen.
Yeah.
And violence is a part of our culture. So, yeah, it has violence in it now. Heartless, just to say that, I've literally had about four people told me that I cried.
Mm.
Like, I literally cried reading this book. Like, I can't believe that, man. I've had people threaten me before. Yeah, you got to bring back this character in different books, man. You got to, man, how you kill him? How you kill him? No, I didn't kill him. Their story, their circumstances did.
Sure.
If someone died, their circumstances led up to that.
Sure. Man. All of this sounds so exciting, and I'm so elated to be able to have you guys. You guys, if you don't have the date secured, that is April 20th. Wild Black is going to be there with the book. And you can bring all your books. How many books you got, Wild Black?
12. I think it's 11 is ready.
Okay. It's
going to be 12.
You bring what you're going to bring, but you guys, you're going to be in for such a treat because this brother, as you can feel, I could feel your energy, you know what I'm saying? I could feel from the beginning when you weren't a writer to now where you've chosen to take the experiences, the vision, the viewpoints, and put them into not only books, but now also an organization that works with young people. Yo, I am for that. Look, Hercules. Let me get that. But yeah, give us a words of wisdom on your final words to the audience.
Man, to me, one thing I always talk to young people about when writing. I just had somebody call me last night, just out the blue. I don't even know this lady's name. And she just went to a whole thing about writing. But one thing I always say, begin at the beginning. To learn how to tell, everybody in a storyteller, you got people that tell a story, you'd be like, oh, boy. You got people, you'd be like, yes, telling the story, right?
So, right.
If you, first of all, if you can recognize that you're a storyteller, begin at the beginning. And one thing I always remember is my first book, Triple Take, was in bookstores on the New York Times bestseller list,
mm-hmm.
and I still was getting rejection letters. Sometimes you got to keep, no matter what. And then even when I had done three books with a major, which with everybody wants to be there, and it wasn't even for me.
Mm.
And I went a whole other route. I was going to self-publish myself. So that it's still about finding your own niche, what works for you. And don't quit your day job. I told you, full-time writer, but I'm not a full-time author.
I see.
Full-time author can tour and just, you know, I've been on a couple book tours and I came back all my money.
Right. You got to.
Full-time author is somewhere right now. He's there, he's been there, he's wondering what those are. What you want to say, I might be on a tow truck, I might be under a car, I might be sitting in my soul. I definitely got to finish the chapter I'm writing on another book I'm finishing. So, I'm not a full-time author, but I am an author. So I am one of Chicago's dope writers.
You already know this. Y'all see this, right? Brother, Wild Black, boo. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. I look forward to connecting at the book fair April 20th. You guys, we're going to come back shortly right after this commercial break. And, brother, let's do this.
Thank you, son.
Much love. Bye, wifey. Peace, y'all. That's so funny. We'll be back, guys, after these messages. Cool.
Out of the heart and soul for Chicago Book Fair, comes the Soulful Book Fair Foundation. The Soulful Book Fair Foundation provides programs, training, and literary opportunities for Black themed writers and their readers while increasing exposure and access to culturally relevant literature in Black communities. The Soulful Book Fair Foundation is built on four pillars. Enhance the Black literary marketplace. Foster training and marketing to Black writers. Archive Black stories and literary experiences. And foster writing and telling of stories through Black youth. Our signature book fairs have showcased over 350 authors. Still, there are not enough opportunities for Black writers to promote their work. The Soulful Book Fair Foundation looks to enhance the Black literary marketplace and provide avenues for authors to gain exposure and sell their books. Everyone has a story to tell. For those people courageous enough to become authors, we help guide them through the process of building a business around their books. From effectively presenting at events, to maximizing social media.
Learn that. Learn what is the record passion and how to market to the authors. That is what made me. I didn't sell out. I think I won out 80 books. And I sold like 16 authors out of the blue.
We offer training and marketing to help Black authors so they can confidently develop fruitful literary careers. Understanding the past allows one to map out the future. We preserve the story behind the storytelling of activists, writers, leaders, and youth in the Black community through state-of-the-art videography produced by the media partner of the Soulful Book Fair Foundation, OM Productions International. We transformed history into our story.
I purchased my first property at 19 years old, and I have done more than 20 deals since then. I can teach you, too. Come visit me at the Soulful Chicago Book Fair.
Children today do not read and write as much as we did in the past. Children today actually read and write more than we used to. Because they post and text as their primary form of communication. The Soulful Book Fair Foundation creates opportunities for young people to share their stories through special workshops.
continually black essay contest validates their young thoughts and creates a platform for their ideas to be taken seriously. We believe that our children would read more if what they read reflected more of who they are. Why not help them be the authors of their own experience?
Well, I started writing things in my journal. And I started writing classes, and I realized
on these four pillars, enhancing the black literary marketplace, bolstering training and marketing for black writers, archiving black stories and literary experiences, and fostering writing and the telling of stories through black youth, the Soulful Book Fair Foundation is building a literary movement for the ages that is amplifying the voices of black authors, poets, and even composers, and creating opportunities for them to share their unique perspectives with millions of literary fans across the city and across the world.
All right, we ready to roll. Let me bring on the last and say the best for last. Say the female energy for last. Called Winter Time. I said, oh, she's going to vibe like that. I'm bringing her on right now. What's up, sis?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for taking your time to be on the show. I know you in the school. You trying to make it go right. You know, all that good stuff. So tell us a little bit about your novels. You have so many. I was like, what do I choose? I don't know what to choose. So tell us, where does this come from, your writing? And it looks like a lot of love stories, but tell me the overall theme of your work and why you do what you do.
Okay, so I write, I'm between writing black romance, everything is black romance, black love, whether it's black thrillers that I write, black paranormal, and I'm focused on the black love story. I am signed to a publishing company, but I also release books independently, so I do both. But my books pretty much are love stories with a twist. I always have some crazy plot twists involved in the stories, whether it's like a thriller that I'm going again, dark romance, or paranormal, it's always some type of crazy finale. But I started writing at age 8, but I didn't start publishing until 2019, so I just had to get out of my own way, get over my own fears. And once I published the first book, I've just been doing it ever since then. So June will be my 5th year as a published author.
I'm trying to tell you, look, the sister came on through, and, you know, one of the things that I love about authors, some when y'all register for the book fair, it be like, this is who I am. But baby, when that author name come, I'll be like, wait a minute, hold up, Winter Time. Wait a minute, Winter Time, you know. So where did that come from, Winter Time? What's that about?
I am a Southtown baby, so I do love winter. Winter's my favorite season, and I just felt like once I started releasing, it was my time. So it's Winter Time. That's where I came up with the name from.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. And now, how in the world did you find out about us? Like, did you, because you're new to our family, so how did you find us?
Yeah, so I always do out-of-town events, but I'm like, I'm not known local in the place that I'm from. So most of the time when I Googled local book events in Chicago, and most of the time I always miss them. So this time I told myself, like, starting at the end of February, beginning of March, I got to start ahead of time because most of the time they're all booked up.
Right.
So I Googled you guys, and your fire was the first one that came up. I said, that's the same thing that all black
women prepare.
I need to see that.
Look, first one that came up, I was just told that recently. They were like, you the first thing to come up. I was like, oh, Electric Boogie, get it on. Oh,
yes,
ah. Yes, it's a great thing. So I love that, as you can see, the brothers are heavy with the fiction. They got it rolling, you know. But it's so nice to have a sister rolling with the fiction. Different books. Tell me, what was your first of all of these books, and how did you just say, I'm doing it?
Okay, so the very first story I published was probably called The Project Maybe, because I am a product of the project. Everybody where I come from, never forget where I came from, who I am. And I signed on with the Urban. But then when it took off and I liked the way it was going, I started going and venturing into different genres. So that was actually the first introduction series that I put out.
Man, I what I love about that, and I mean, are you a teacher? Are you in a school now? Did you tell me that?
I am in a school. I work in a cluster classroom. I'm a paraprofessional for children with autism.
Got you. I was a paraprofessional, so I do know that world, honey.
Okay.
In New York, no doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt. And I think it's great because, let me tell you, I did not understand what a book does. But when you tell people that you're an author and that you actually have a book and you could show them kids the back with your pitch on it, it is so inspirational to them. And right, talk about that. Like, what's their feedback about your work?
So I pretty much have let kids involved with the work because of the genre.
Yeah.
But my baby, after kids, they are very supportive of me because they've been growing up with me for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's the coolest thing in the world. Like, my mommy's an author, and currently my daughter and I are working in the children's book together. So she, you know, she's watched me for all these years, and now she's like, I want to write a book with you, so now we have something in the making together.
How old is she?
She's 7.
Word. Let me tell you something. My daughter came out with her first book when she was 7. And I wrote the words, and she did the photography. She's now a professional photographer. But that was her first project, and she wanted money. She was like, Mommy, I want money. Like, we were in New York, and we were in an affluent community. And I said, well, you got to create something that more than one person can just get involved in. And I had my books out, so I knew how to do that. So, honey, you're going to flourish with that one because it just is what it is. And it shows them, like, the power that one has to create their environment, you know, to create their reality. And that book world is a thing. So I'm so happy you are doing that. Now, before we go, because I know we didn't have a whole lot of time, what is the future for what Winter Time is doing? What do you want to see happen with your books?
What I'm hoping is that I can build a platform here within my own community. Because like I said, I travel a lot to book events like Atlanta, South Carolina, Pasadena. Like, I'm all over, you know, our great state. But here, I have to build some momentum over my name, let them know, like, hey, because there are tons of female fiction artists here. We only see them, like, during certain book events. So I plan on, once I just build some momentum, I'll build my name up local-wise, get more better with the promo and the branding and everything like that. Because I will focus my attention solely on this, and I forget that there is a business side of it sometimes. So I am grounding myself to make sure that I make sure that copyright gets stay on top of that. And pretty much just build it. Building
Nice. You and our family now, baby. That's what that is. And so I take responsibility for not just selling people a table at a book fair, like a Dolly Book. Like, we have a whole experience that we get involved in, and we overlap. And next thing you know, you in this store. Next thing you know, you on a radio show. And so that's how I see it. Somebody got to do this for us, because if we don't, it won't happen. You get a lot of support for, like, dance and fine art and this and that, but the writers be getting, like, boop, short end of the stick type mode, but not no more. Boop, 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 boop.
I appreciate that.
Because
I actually have a book for the library, letting you know what about that, and I
wanted
to move into some
stories as well. Nice. Well, we will be a part of that reality for you. We keep you abreast of all the things that are growing there.
Okay.
We recently did a database of all the authors that have applied for our event and went over 1,000 Black writers. And so to have you in that family is gorgeous. But I want to thank you for coming on today. We're about to – girl, you made it go right, girl. She was like, hey, buddy, buddy. So thank you for being here. And thank you guys for being here on Gathering of the Griots. Be with us next Tuesday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., and we're going to do it some more with some more great Black writers. Peace. Love y'all much. Thank you. Have a good day, Mama.
You too.
All right. Well, guys, we'll be back, and we look forward to being here with you again. Peace and blessings. Bye-bye now.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe, India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsahamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Dziękuję, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Madasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Jerez, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.
Goodbye.